Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent, bringing you everything from the boats to the boardrooms, breaking down the news, spilling a little industry fish oil, and sharing the sharp market insights you need to know. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione.
Grab your pitchfork, Lauren.
Oh no, why?
The snow crab season in Newfoundland and Labrador is about to begin.
Well, then I think we need to get Barb Dean Simmons on the line, not a pitchfork.
Oh, we're going to get her on too, because talks between harvesters and processors to set dock prices in the world's largest snow crab fishery have been halted before they even started. And on top of that, it's just days before the 2026 season is expected to begin. The Fish, Food, and Allied Workers, or FFAW, the union that represents inshore harvesters in the Canadian province of Newfoundland and Labrador, declared over the weekend that it won't begin negotiations with the Association of Seafood Producers, also known as ASP, the trade group that represents the majority of Newfoundland's processors, until Canada's Fisheries Minister, Joanne Thompson, announces an opening date and quota for the 2026 fishery.
In a statement issued Saturday, FFAW said its snow crab negotiating working group voted unanimously not to begin crab negotiations until Minister Thompson releases her decision. The news came just days after sources told Undercurrent that the FFAW and ASP had agreed to begin formal talks this past Monday.
Joining us now on the pod for the latest installment of The Crabby and the Canadian is Undercurrent's Barb Dean Simmons. Barb, what's going on up there?
Well, Amanda, as we say here about the weather in Newfoundland, wait 5 minutes and it will change. And it has, kind of. So first, a little bit of background. As anybody has been following the saga that is the March lead up to snow crab fishing in Canada, particularly in Newfoundland and Labrador, contention is the rule of law here for most of March. So unlike in other provinces where there's no formal mechanism for dock price setting, I mean, in the Gulf, they're fishing. They started fishing about a week ago, and they just set the dock price between harvesters and processors, and off they go. Newfoundland and Labrador has a law called the Fishing Industry Collective Bargaining Act, FICBA, or FICBA for short, which spells out the process for setting dock prices for all species, including crab. So in that process, essentially, the two sides hold formal talks to try to agree on the price. And if the union and processors can't agree themselves, then an independent price-setting panel assesses the prices they've offered and considers market reports and then determines which one of those prices should start the season. That's called the final offer selection. And in the case of crab, the harvesters and processors also agreed for the past two seasons to a formula to assess the wholesale receipts at the end of the season to determine if harvesters should have received a post-season bonus. So basically, if the price of crab goes higher than the dock price was set, then they calibrate that at the end of the season and the harvesters get a little bit more of the share of the final price. So that worked out well in 2024 with the harvesters getting some extra money just before Christmas. For 2025, however, it went off the rails a little bit. The FFAW was irked at the Canadian 28 cent per pound bonus paid at the end of the 2025 season, saying that it should have been closer to $1 a pound to bring them in line with the dock prices paid to harvesters in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. So for the past several weeks, the union has been pushing the province to amend FICBA to give them the legal right to strike. The union executive has also said that it won't participate in any process that involves the fish price setting panel or the final offer selection process. So then yesterday, I guess the provincial government of Newfoundland and Labrador dropped the shoe, put its foot down. And in a statement to media, the province appears to have shut the door on the union's request for the right to strike, saying, quote, "The legislation does not provide for strikes or lockouts. Any return to the right to strike and lockout would require legislative changes. No changes have been made," full stop. Furthermore, the province said the price setting process of the past, including the price setting panel and the final offer selection, will remain in place and deadlines have been set. So the price setting panel hearing is set for this Monday, March 30th. That means that if the FFAW and ASP can't reach a dock price agreement through negotiation before then, they'll have to present their dock price offers to the price setting panel 48 hours before Monday, which gives them a deadline of this Saturday. And the deadline to set the snow crab dock price for 2026 is April 6th, says the province. The thing to watch for now is the FFAW response, given that they seem to have been pushed into the proverbial corner. I've been checking their social media sites today, and I threw an email to them, and so far they haven't commented. And it's 3 o'clock right now, Newfoundland time. Will they protest or tie on as they have done in the past? We saw that in the 2023 season and when they tied on for 39 days. A seasoned gambler might bet on it. Will the dock price wind up to be what everyone can live with? Will fishermen refuse to fish? Will the season be delayed? Will the quota of crab be close to the record of somewhere around 62,000 tons, which we saw last year? So many questions. All of that will be answered in chapter, where are we now, 7 or 8 of the 2026 Canadian Snow Crab Saga.
Is that all it is? It seems like it's so much more than that, Barb.
I don't know. I did a rough quick check. I think we're at chapter 10, but who's counting?
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, time's ticking.
Time is ticking. The season typically starts around the middle of April. The Gulf season starts, weather permitting, and if there's no ice in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, they'll get going on the April 4th. So yeah, it's we're coming into crab season. And as somebody told me today, you know, it's important to get that crab into the market at the beginning when the supply is dry and the prices are high. And once the taps get turned on, supply increases, prices usually settle down a little bit. So if you want to get the best prices for the catch, you want to go fishing sooner rather than later.
Well, it sounds like we'll be having you on quite a bit in the coming weeks. Thanks, Barb. You can find links to more stories from Barb in the show notes. Now, Lauren, how about a market update?
So we've been watching the Chilean salmon market over the past few weeks. And if you've been watching, you'll know it's been a bit of a tug of war between buyers trying to hold pricing down and sellers dealing with tightening supply. Well, this week, the sellers are starting to win that argument. U.S. wholesale prices for fresh Chilean salmon moved higher in week 13, reversing the softness that we've seen in the prior couple of weeks. And the move is most visible in the larger fillet sizes and on whole fish, where availability is genuinely getting tight. Smaller fillets are holding steadier, but the overall tone has shifted. So what's driving it? Harvest activity out of Chile has slowed. We're seeing more wellboat availability, which signals fewer fish being brought to market. And buyers who were able to find alternative supply a few weeks ago from other origins and use that to push back on Chilean are finding that window is closing. On top of that, Brazil is competing hard for Chilean volumes right now. Easter falls on April 5th this year, and Brazilian importers have been buying actively to secure supply for the holiday, which is one of the biggest salmon consumption periods in Latin America. Chilean prices to Brazil have firmed for 7 consecutive weeks, and that export pull is limiting what's available for other markets, including the U.S. Now, zooming out, Chile had a strong February on the export side overall, with seafood shipments up 10% year-on-year. The U.S. is still Chile's biggest market, but demand from Japan, Brazil, and a rapidly growing China means Chilean producers are juggling a very busy global order book right now. Now, on the frozen side, it's more of a mixed picture here. Portions looked fairly well supplied, and there are reports of at least one major Chilean producer moving volume into the U.S. at below market levels, which tells you inventories in that category are still elevated. So portions, not a lot of urgency there, but on frozen fillets, particularly the 3 to 4 pound range, that's a different story. Stocks are tight and pricing is reflecting that. So the gap between portions and fillets and frozen is widening, and there's really trading on different fundamentals right now. So full price data is always available to our UCN Pro subscribers right on the website.
You know, I'm actually planning on having salmon for Easter.
So am I. No, I was going to do, bagels and lox and all the trimmings for a nice Easter brunch.
Oh, yeah, that's delightful. That's what I would normally do, but we're actually going to Hershey Park for Easter. We're ditching the family this year, the extended family.
Love
We're, and my husband and
it.
I are taking the kids to Hershey Park. We're going to go on rides for Easter and celebrate. But I did book us at Hershey Park. They have the chocolatier, they're like their restaurant there. And it's like a normal restaurant, but they do things where like they try to incorporate as much chocolate as they can into like the food. And so they do it with salmon. And I think I've talked about this before. It's a Heath Bar crusted salmon. It is the most delicious thing I've ever had in my entire life.
Can you bring some home? Because I love Heath bars, I love salmon, but I can't imagine them together.
How about you ditch the family? Come with me for Easter. They can
Even
fend for them.
better.
They can fend for themselves. I will definitely bring you back some. It is delicious and I am very much looking forward to it. And if you have ever been to Hershey and you are going back there again, I recommend highly that you eat there and order that specific dish. But back to some big headlines from this week. Undercurrent has learned that AZ Gems, one of the US's largest shrimp importers, is in talks to acquire International Seafood Ventures, or ISV, a big Seattle, Washington-based shellfish importer and supplier. The deal, which was being talked about on the sidelines of Seafood Expo North America in Boston earlier this month, is not yet final, and the specific details are not yet known, including what is being offered in the transaction. AZ Gems has rolled up several other seafood companies in recent years, including importers and frozen seafood manufacturers. More details in the show notes.
Meanwhile, a class action lawsuit filed in federal court on March 18th accuses U.S. retail giant Target of making misleading sustainability claims to promote its private label tuna products. The complaint, brought by plaintiff Sue Kim in the U.S. District Court of the Central District of California, alleges the Minneapolis, Minnesota headquartered retailer marketed its Good and Gather tuna products as, quote, sustainably caught to charge a premium while sourcing from purse seine and longline fisheries linked to bycatch, overfishing, and marine habitat damage. In the center of the complaint is Target's use of certification from the Marine Stewardship Council, whose blue eco label appears on the packaging. The plaintiff argues that MSC certified fisheries supplying the tuna do not meet consumers' expectation of sustainability.
According to the filing, Target's marketing campaign, including front of pack sustainably caught claims, the MSC blue tick, and references to protecting ocean resources, misled consumers seeking environmentally responsible seafood. The plaintiff contends she and consumers would not have purchased the products or would have paid less had they known the alleged realities behind sourcing practices. Target, which is one of the largest US retailers with approximately 2,000 stores across the country, is far from the first retailer to be sued for using sustainability eco labels. Walmart, Aldi, and Trader Joe's have all faced lawsuits from consumers alleging sustainability claims in their marketing or on their product packaging were misleading or false. So, more details in the show notes.
In other canned and pouched tuna-related news, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, has pulled around 3.4 million pounds of canned tuna from the U.S. market after finding it was falsely labeled as dolphin safe. The action follows a multi-year investigation by NOAA Fisheries Office of Law Enforcement, which uncovered imports from Mexico that didn't meet U.S. labeling standards. In total, the agency issued more than $220,000 in fines. According to NOAA, two separate cases were involved. In one, a distributor brought in 74 shipments, around 2.2 million pounds, of mislabeled tuna over an 11-month period. In another, a major nationwide retailer imported roughly 1.2 million pounds of similar products. In both instances, the companies cooperated with investigators, pulled the tuna from shells, and donated it. The retailer also cut ties with the supplier and tightened its import review process. The issue taps into a long-running trade tension between the U.S. and Mexico over dolphin-safe labeling, a dispute dating back to the Dolphin Protection Consumer Information Act, which sets strict standards for how tuna can be marketed in the U.S. While Mexico remains eligible to export tuna to the U.S., it's still subject to annual NOAA review, and this latest case shows enforcement remains active.
In other news, new details are emerging about the April 2025 grounding of the scallop vessel Eileen Rita, and investigators say fatigue was the key factor. According to the National Transportation Safety Board, the vessel's captain fell asleep at the helm while operating alone, causing the 86-foot vessel to run aground on Green Island just east of Boston. All three crew members were rescued without injury, but the vessel later sank and was declared a total loss, valued at about $720,000. At the time, it was carrying roughly 4,000 gallons of diesel fuel, with responders reporting a visible sheen in the water. The National Transportation Safety Board found the captain had logged just 8 hours of fragmented sleep over the previous 48 hours, spread across multiple fishing trips. He fell asleep about 10 minutes before the grounding, while the vessel was running on autopilot and with no crew awake on the bridge. Critically, the vessel wasn't equipped with a watch alarm system, which could have alerted the captain or crew when no one was actively monitoring navigation. The incident is a stark reminder of the risks tied to fatigue in the commercial fishing sector, where long hours and tight margins can limit rest. The National Transportation Safety Board says that while watch alarms aren't required on vessels like the Eileen Rita, they can provide a crucial safety net, and in this case, may have prevented the grounding altogether.
Moving over to Alaska, the Gulf of Alaska Groundfish Fleet resumed pollock fishing over the weekend after suspending fishing for several days in protest of proposals under consideration at the Alaska Board of Fisheries that would restrict trawling in state-managed waters. The board is reviewing several proposals from a coalition of conservationists and commercial fishing groups critical of trawling that would narrowly define trawl gear as non-pelagic and require performance standards to keep nets off the bottom within 3 nautical miles of the shoreline. But the state panel took no action on Friday, March 20th at its meeting in Anchorage, and instead will send the issue to a special joint committee split between the state-run board and the Federal North Pacific Fishery Management Council. 3 members each from the state board and the Fishery Management Council would convene for a to-be-scheduled meeting of a joint protocol committee to consider the proposals in a public setting. The Alaska Whitefish Trawlers Association, an industry group that represents much of the Gulf of Alaska groundfish fleet, said the board's decision to delegate the issue to a specialized joint committee was a smart move. But conservationists allege the state regulatory board had buckled to industry pressure. Jacob Resnick has a deep dive, and the link is in the show notes.
And in other Alaska news, U.S. salmon producer Circle Seafoods has significantly expanded its retail footprint, announcing a nationwide rollout into 470 Whole Foods Market stores. The company revealed in a LinkedIn post this week that its pink salmon is now available in the frozen aisle across the Amazon-owned food retailers' U.S. locations, marking a major step forward in its distribution. In addition to brick-and-mortar availability, Circle Seafoods said its offerings can also be purchased through Whole Foods' online storefront via Amazon. Circle Seafoods' frozen pink salmon can already be found in more than 3,000 stores, including Harris Teeter, HEB, Publix, Sprouts Farmers Market, and via delivery through Instacart.
Between this news and thinking back to all the pink salmon retail products I saw in Boston, I want to say this may be the year for pink salmon.
Maybe for retail, but baseball season is about to begin, and it's all about that lobster. So food service and facilities management company Aramark revealed its new lineup for offerings at Major League Baseball stadiums this year. And honestly, there's not a lot of seafood compared to years past. But this year, there's just like elevated hot dog experiences. Yeah, so not a lot of seafood, but Fenway Park, home of the Boston Red Sox, they're going to bat for seafood this year. Prepare yourself for a lobster poutine, a combo of fries, Luke's lobster meat, clam chowder, and bacon in the most delightful lobster boat-shaped container. The sun shining, the crack of the bat, a cold beer in one hand, a boat of lobster poutine in the other. Add it to our seafood bucket list, Lauren.
Don't need to tell me twice.
They also have a surf and turf dog too. So I told you, a lot of hot dogs. But this one is topped with Luke's lobster meat plus bacon, chives, and butter on a toasted brioche bun.
Packing my bags as we speak.
Well, that does it for us this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here next week.
Bye-bye.